Welcome to The Last Resort, the last place you'd look for legitimate sports opinions. I am your host, Spenny Harris, and I am joined, as always, by my main man, Philly Brandon. Brandon, what's going on, brother?
Not too much. I had to represent Philadelphia. Got a whole lot of New Jersey and I guess a little bit of Brooklyn going on in the room at the moment.
Before we get to our special guest, we teased something last week. We said that we were going to join a podcast network. This week, we are pleased to share with you guys listening, Brandon and I, The Last Resort, we've joined the Blue Wire Podcast Network. So a quick round of applause. I was clapping for those listening. And yeah, Brandon, I'm just excited to be part of the network. What about you?
Yeah, I'm stoked. I first heard of Blue Wire when they were putting in their own studio at the Wynn in Las Vegas, which is awesome. I'm hoping that's part of like the membership privileges. Maybe we get a couple deals. Eh, free buffet I'd settle for, but I'm just hyped to be a part of it.
Listen, if joining this network gets me like a poolside cabana at the Wynn, I don't even know if they have those, but I'm in. We're all in, Blue Wire. So happy to be a part of the network. All right, let's get to our special guest, Brandon. You mentioned it earlier. Got a lot of Brooklyn in the house, a little bit of Jersey. He is a reporter for Nets Daily, and like I said, he's from the greatest state in America, New Jersey. That's my guy, Chris Mulholland. Chris, what's going on, brother? How you living tonight?
Doing good, you know, just in the greatest state on the planet, you know, with New Jersey. So hanging out, man. Not much going on.
At least y'all believe in yourselves.
Listen, Brandon, you can't talk trash. I've been to Philly, all right? That place is a dumpster fire. You got to come to Jersey. We'll give you pizza. We won't eat that Philly cheesesteak garbage. You'll enjoy yourself. And we'll watch a basketball team that isn't a flash in the pan like your 76ers.
I mean, you're still looking up at us for the time being, mind you.
It's going to be a short time being. All right, we got it. We had some pretty breaking net stuff today. I know Chris was on a call with Steve Nash, Blake Griffin, and Kevin Durant. Oh, no, not Kevin Durant. I'm sorry. Steve Nash gave the Kevin Durant update. So let's start right there. Chris, tell Brandon and I about this Kevin Durant injury update that you got today, and when can fans realistically now expect KD to return to the court?
Well, to answer that second part, I don't think there is even a return date to even throw out there, right? I think the Nets, we all know, they're very cautious with approaches, and especially with Kevin Durant, you've seen him not only just rest a couple games with the Achilles rehabilitation, but today they even said it. They said that, number one, with the Kevin Durant, he had a scan, and the second scan that they had, which was more clear because of the bleeding was gone away. Listen, I'm not a medical person, but they got a clear image of it, and that he's going to have a scan next week. And what they're trying to see is mostly the hamstring be fully healed. And on top of that, it's not one of those things where he's just sitting in a chair waiting to get back on the practice court. Steve Nash told us today as well that he's practicing on the court. He's just doing very light work. He's doing a lot of half court, shooting in rhythm, getting kind of just in, he's in that stage of he's ramping back up, you know. So when that time does come, they don't have to take a couple games to ramp him up rather than come back. So they're doing minor work with him overall. But, you know, the biggest takeaway from this whole thing is we all heard it. Steve Nash said right before All-Star break that he was improving at a rapid rate. That was prior to the Clippers game on 21st. And on top of that, he said that that we could see him back by All-Star break. Then obviously we learned that he was being held throughout All-Star break to do a lot more rehabilitation. And then today, which is the 10th, we heard today that he's going to be awaiting a second scan next week. And they will further evaluate him from there on.
Okay, so kind of scary news for Nets fans. Obviously, if you're a fan of the work of Kevin Durant, you just got to hope he's okay. These hamstring injuries suck. I know I had a pod earlier in the week where I spoke to your co-host, Doug. He talked about how he had a bad hamstring injury early on in his life. I've had one too. Chris, I would be in the NBA if it wasn't for hurting my hamstring in the eighth grade and ruined my basketball career, man. I was out for half the year. I tried to rush back. Made the mistake, and I was never the same.
I had my fair share of injuries. I've had two torn ACLs, dislocated knees, fingers, you name it. I've done just about everything in the book. The hospitals really know me well around here.
Which one? Valley?
Oh,
Hackensack?
Which one did I go to next? I went for the X-rays. It's a new bridge in Paramus. Used to be called Bergen Regional.
Okay.
And then got all my surgeries done at Hackensack. Shout out to David Konigsberg, my surgeon. So got those both done.
Steve Nash was not the only member of the Nets organization to talk to the press today. You guys also had newcomer Blake Griffin give his reaction to becoming a Net. What were some takeaways that you had from your press conference with Blake Griffin?
It's interesting to see how this it all plans out, right? Because we saw the Blake Griffin AMA with Bleacher Report where he said, hey, the Nets are in need for a four-man, which he also kind of described a little bit today. But Nash literally views him as a small ball five off the bench, which is expected. You know, that's what Woj tweeted out when he initially broke the news and everything. But the thing is with Blake, I think that it's going to be interesting because he's not going to be playing tomorrow against the Celtics in their second half season. I guess you could say second half opener. So they listed him out with left knee injury management, but Blake quickly shut it down saying it's not injury. It's more of just a ramp up, which makes sense, which goes back to the same point with what I made earlier with the Nets are very cautious with people that don't play a lot. You've seen it with Shumpert. You've seen it with Von Leigh. You saw it with Roberson. The list goes on. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving. They're very cautious with injuries. So he's just ramping up right now. They had him in practice today. He did practice today. He talked a little bit about his role. Nash would just like to see him in the short role, which is interesting. We saw that a lot with the Clippers, but, you know, he doesn't really have the legs back. You know, he hasn't dunked in 2 years. You know, the left knee, like I just mentioned. It's going to be interesting to see how he kind of evolves in that role. And on top of it, you know, like I've said before, what I think that's going to happen is I think his passing is going to be the biggest thing because it provides him with a stretch five that not only could spread the floor, but he has a great passing ability for a lot of big guys, which isn't really highlighted that much. So when will we see Blake? I'm not too sure, but it's nothing serious whatsoever. You know, it's just a ramp up.
What did you think of the picture of Steve Nash and Blake Griffin out to lunch in Brooklyn or dinner? I'm not really sure what time of day it was.
Well, Nash is a player's coach. You know, we've heard it all along. You know, DeAndre Jordan said it. I think it was the Houston Rockets game right after Steve Nash was named the coach of the month. He said he's a player's coach. He allows the players to police themselves. And, you know, with Steve, Steve mentioned that he doesn't necessarily have a prior relationship with Blake. He just played against him. Obviously, we all kind of know that in the early years of Blake when he was with the Clippers. But with that picture, you know, that just shows that Nash is – what stood out to me, I guess my takeaway from that, which I tweeted out, was that Nash did take time away from his break to go meet with Blake, and that shows that he's invested in him, and he's also invested in the Nets' second half of the season. He wants to use kind of probably laying out, you know, simple small talk, hello, welcome to Brooklyn, whatever the case is. Obviously, a picture doesn't have volume to it. So you can make the speculation all you want, but I think my biggest takeaway was it just showed how invested Nash is, not only with the Nets in the second half of the season, but how invested he is in with Blake.
I just hope Nash paid. That's really my only wish for that. Okay, good.
He's a classy guy.
Yeah, he's classy.
So I got a real short segment, just a little bit of buyer's remorse. Today, it came out, obviously, that LaMarcus Aldridge could be had for what's probably going to be a very small price. I mean, San Antonio tipped their hand. They agreed to part ways. So is there any part of you as an analyst and a Nets fan who's thinking, man, if only we wait a little bit, would you prefer to have LaMarcus over Blake if they were both around the same time?
You know, it's interesting because with LaMarcus, you know, he's not as mobile as he once was. It's kind of like he has identical mobility to DeAndre Jordan, right? And on top of that, don't get me wrong, he could shoot the ball. We've all seen that, especially going back to his Portland days. He's always had shooting in his repertoire. And on top of that, you know, it's going to be interesting. You know, he doesn't move too well. I don't know how he would really adjust well in the Nets switching defense, which switches constantly. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how it turns out. Obviously, I don't think the Nets are obviously going to trade for him because, you know, he's a high contract. It's a lot of money to take on the books. They agreed to part ways, so obviously that clearly means if they are not able to trade him or they can't find a suitor for him, they're probably going to end up buying him out. We'll see how it evolves. A couple names I'd keep in mind, Miami Heat. I personally would like to see him. This is just opinionated, but I would like to see him go back to Portland and reunite with Dame. I think that would be a good fit, I think, because, you know, Portland, they do lack a little bit of size. LaMarcus Aldridge can shoot, like I mentioned before. It would be interesting. And obviously, you know, reunion's a reunion. And I think he would really help out the Blazers in a good way, but it'll be interesting to see how he turns out. See, it'll be interesting.
We were just talking about that before you joined the call, and we were saying that if it had been 2012 – I mean, that's a top team in the West. Unfortunately, now, you know, we got a bunch of guys on the tail end and Dame just trying to drag them through the conference.
Exactly. And you also got to know, too, like with LaMarcus Aldridge, you can imagine that the Spurs have probably tried to trade him before. You know, he was there for a while, you know, with his contract obviously being the main spotlight over his name and stuff like that. You don't know what the what went on behind the scenes. But, you know, it was one of those things where both parties agreed to mutually part ways, and we'll see what happens. You know, if he gets traded, it's probably going to be going to a contender. I don't think he would go to any other team aside from that. And when he gets bought out, he has freedom of choice to wherever he goes as long as the other half is interested. So we'll wait back and see. I think it'll be a quick move, though. I don't think it'll be something that prolongs for a while.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the way it goes. But you guys did commit to Blake. He's in town. He's on the roster. He's going to be getting somewhat significant minutes. Mm-hmm. Are you at all worried that, you know, his time on the floor is just going to stunt the growth of Nick Claxton, who was really starting to surge towards the end of the first half?
I think overall, I think with Blake, I don't think he's going to see that many minutes as people are portraying it to be. I think in the rotation, obviously, throughout the whole season, Nash is very – he doesn't like to give a lot away with the rotations. I think what it's going to come down to, I think you see maybe 10 to 15 minutes. I would say you can near it more towards 14 off the bench. And that's a good question, you know, with the front court, right? Because you saw it with Claxton. He really provided the Nets insurance when they were really hurt in the front court with injuries. You know, Durant, and you had a little bit of Jeff Green with the shoulder contusion. And just everything now everyone's back, including Reggie Perry, who's back from Long Island, right? So they got a lot of front court pieces that they could really mix and match with. With Blake, you know, I said earlier that on the podcast we did a couple days ago that Blake, he's just going to be another big body that Nash could throw in the mix, right? And on top of that, it's veteran experience. He's got the connections around him. DeAndre Jordan spoke highly of him today too, as well, saying like, hey, he completely 180'd his game from when he played with the Clippers. You know, on the Clippers, he was a highlight machine, just strict paint, not a shot. Then he progressed to the elbow jumper, which we all saw. And then in Detroit, he fully just transformed his game, started shooting threes, and hasn't dunked in 2 years. But, you know, when it comes to Claxton, it's going to be interesting, right? Because with Claxton too, Nash even said it on it was against the Rockets game. That was the last game of the first half of the season. He mostly mentioned how he wants Nick to keep his head down and just kind of keep moving along, right? You know, Nick, at the end of the day, he's a development player, you know? I think a lot of people put too many high expectations on him, especially, you know, a lot of it goes around with the hype aspect. But with Nick, it's going to be interesting what type of minutes he gets. Obviously, with Jeff Green, listen, it's questionable tomorrow with his left shoulder contusion. I wouldn't be surprised if Nat just said, hey, hold him out. You know, TLC as well, he's doubtful with the right knee soreness as well. We'll see Claxton tomorrow as well because Griffin's not going to be playing. So it'll be interesting to see how they balance the two, but I don't think it'll stunt Claxton's potential growth.
Brandon, I know you're not on Nets Twitter a ton, but the way that Nets Twitter talks about Nick Claxton, you would think that this man is destined to be the next Wilt Chamberlain. I've never seen a player this hyped up on Nets Twitter more than Nick Claxton. Am I wrong there, Chris?
No, you tweet a photo of Nick Claxton, you'll get 200 likes. You don't have to type anything. Like, that's just how it rolls.
Photo of Nick Claxton.
That's what I've been saying. Like, you know, it's too, don't get me wrong, I really like Claxton. Obviously, I've been one of those guys that's covered him from the Long Island time in person, talked to him then and everything like that. And I know what he could bring. I know what's in his bag. And I know there's three-point shooting. I know there's passing. You know, the defense is the main thing that sticks out to me, especially versatility and footwork. But on top of that, guys, you guys can't compare him to Chris Bosh this early. You know, like, just slow it up a little bit, you know, just take the foot off the gas a little bit. But I think he's got potential. I think he's got upside. And, you know, when we look back at him and be like, oh, wow, he was a second-round pick, you know, I think. And especially in this type of offense, you know, where the pressure's not necessarily on him. You know, you got a lot of offensive weapons around him, spaces the floor. We've seen him, what he's like in the hard pick and roll, a couple other scenarios with other players, so I'm excited to see how he develops and grows.
I'm with you on that. Just one more quick thing from this interview today. You know, I heard Steve Nash talking about how he feels, I guess, more comfortable as a coach now, more effective, more confident. Is that something that you've noticed in the last few weeks, Nash kind of being more comfortable in that coaching role?
Yeah, well, I think his ATOs, which is out of timeouts, the ATOs, I think he's gotten a lot. He's been really great at with ATOs. I think that's one of the main things that he's been good at. And at the same time, you know, coaching, being a player, even as Steve Nash, you know, one of the most generational point guards in the game of basketball itself, to becoming a coach, especially when you're coaching three superstars, you got high expectations and all that. You got to wonder, you know, obviously the adjustment is not going to be snap a finger and say, hey, Steve Nash was greatest basketball player. He's been great as a coach. But like we talked about previously with the coaching staff around him, with D'Antoni, Udoka, Jack Vaughn, all the way down to just Tiago Splinter, Mari Stoudemire, it's a very well-supported cast and a great cast for any rookie head coach to develop in. So you know, his confidence has been going up. You know, that at in the beginning of times, you kind of saw him call a lot of late timeouts, you know, timeouts that weren't timed right, or usually, well, most, I would say 90% of them were too late. And, you know, as of time, you know, he's gotten a lot more comfortable with that. Like I mentioned, the ATOs, you can tell his confidence is great. And at the same time, like we mentioned before, he's a player's coach, and he lets his players police themselves, you know. So it's not, he's not like one of those coaches that are going to be hovering above all the plays, or, hey, you guys ran this play wrong, hey, you ran this scheme wrong. He's going to be one of those guys that steps in. He talked about it. DeAndre talked about it. He mostly said he steps in when the team needs him to step in. But a good amount of time, he lets them police themselves, which is great for players. You know, players don't necessarily like to be told what to do for the full 48-minute game. You know, they want them to police themselves, find their flow, and do everything the case is, especially with a team full of superstars and championship contenders. So his confidence is going up. I think that he'll be impressive in the second half. You'll see a lot of improvements out of him.
You guys have another guy whose confidence was sky high towards the end of that first half. And James Harden really carried the team, who was short on star power from what you guys expected to have towards the end. He made a real name for himself in the MVP race. Mm-hmm. Do you think he can keep that same pace with a healthier Nets squad in the second half and maybe steal an MVP this year?
Well, the good thing about James Harden is he goes by the flow of the game, right? He's not one of those guys that needs to score a certain amount of points or have a certain amount of assists or focus on the stats. He's one of those guys that lets the game come to him, and he says that almost after every single game. And the thing with James is we've seen it. Like, he doesn't need to score the ball. He could facilitate 15, 14, 16 assists, whatever the case is. And if the team needs him to score, he can quickly flip the switch, and, hey, you're good to go. So we saw it against the Suns game, what he could do scoring the ball, and we've seen it countless amounts of times when it comes to facilitating the ball. With a fully healthier squad, that just gives him more weapons to work with, you know? So I think it's not going to be a negative. Obviously, with the MVP race, like we've talked about, we don't know what decides the MVP. There's no check boxes. There's no, like, little, okay, these are the 10 things you need to be the MVP of the league, you know? So, and, you know, there's going to be some people at the end of the day, when you think about voting, they're going to weigh out, okay, who is this supporting cast? You know, if you have Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan, whoever else comes when the roster is fully complete by playoffs, they're probably going to take that into consideration compared to other guys such as Joel Embiid or Nikola Jokic or, you know, other MVP candidates that have been names that been hovering around. But I think that he'll be able to consistently carry over that same momentum and that same style of play. Whether the team needs him to score or facilitate, he's going to be a team player and just accept that sacrifice.
I don't know if Harden will be the MVP this year. I do know that right now he is an 18-1 favorite to win the award. So you'd get a nice return for your buck if you bet on James Harden right now. But I think the guys in Vegas agree with Chris that while it would be nice for him to win the MVP, it's probably unlikely given the scenario.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
All right, Chris, I need you to do me a favor. I need you to tell Brandon, who doesn't watch a lot of Nets basketball, how special Bruce Brown has been for the Nets team this year.
All right, let me break this down for you. So what's your favorite team?
I'm from Philadelphia.
So you're a Sixers guy. All right. With Bruce, right? He's how I describe Bruce. He's an opportunistic player. He's literally that in a nutshell, right? So he will do all the small things you want with a full energy from the first minute to the 48th minute of the game. That's how I would kind of describe Bruce. On top of that, I think Bruce, number one, we've seen it. Nets play a lot of positionless basketball. They put him at the five. He grabs rebounds. Like I've said, he's opportunistic. He gives the Nets a lot of second chance opportunities. And with the supporting cast of, you know, with the gravity of James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant, you know, imagine a fully healthy Nets roster on the court. That allows Bruce Brown to be open. So he's been working. He really likes that left corner three. He's been nailing that down. His floater's been his go-to move in the paint. We've seen the shot charts. It's literally a coloring book of green inside the paint. And just overall, with Bruce, it's one of those players that's really a hidden. It was a diamond in the rough player. We saw him in Detroit. Obviously, you know, he was known as a defensive guard. Pistons threw him on, mostly the most offensive threat player on the opposing team as a lockdown defender. But we didn't really get to see a lot of his offensive skill set. We didn't really get to see, okay, the passing. We didn't get to see the cutting. We didn't get to see a lot of kind of that aspect of things. But with Bruce as a whole, he's really transformed his game. And due to the gravity that James Harden does, and obviously, as you guys have seen, James Harden with the facilitating. He gives it a lot of his role players extra looks to build their confidence up, which is also one of the reasons confidence is really necessary for this team, because James Harden said all along in the playoffs, it only takes one person to impact the series, and he wants all of his role players to have confidence when that point comes. So Bruce is really taking advantage of the opportunity. You know, it's a bang for your buck. You can only imagine the Nets are going to want to extend him. And you can imagine Bruce's return that, you know, this was a team that he's really evolved his game. He's got career highs across the board percentage, two-point attempts, three-point attempts. Just you go down the list, it's all mostly all career highs, steals, blocks, just everything. So you can imagine that he'll probably want to stay remain in Brooklyn too.
The way I've compared Bruce Brown is on Fireside Nets is to that of Andre Iguodala when he joined the Warriors, what his role was. Now, I probably stole that from someone. Chris, I might have stole that from you. Maybe Matt Brooks over there at Net Daily. I definitely took that Iguodala comparison from somebody. That's not original. But I thought about it, and it makes a lot of sense. Iguodala complemented what Steph, what Clay, what KD did so well. That's what Bruce Brown does for the three stars on this Nets team.
Most definitely, because that's a great, very great comparison, right? Because Iguodala, we saw, and that's what I mean by what James Harden said, any player can make a difference maker. Andre Iguodala won a finals MVP. He was very impactful in that finals. And overall, like you said, with Iguodala, he was literally a 3-and-D guy for that Warriors when they really needed it. So he provided a lot of clutch shots. Obviously, he was a rover, ran a lot of baseline. Obviously, that was a long time ago, so I had to dive into some film to give you guys some Iguodala analysis. But overall, you know, like Bruce Brown's that rover. You know, he's a rover. Right. He's an opportunistic player, and he's that guy that has contagious energy that really lights the team up. He does the small things all around that really impact this Nets team.
So when you were first breaking him down, you used the term diamond in the rough to describe Bruce Brown. This is for contending teams. This is really the time to go out and find more diamonds in the rough that might help you get to that title, get you over the edge. What's one more guy that you want Sean Marks to go get that gives the Nets an even better shot at the title than they have right now?
Well, you know, obviously the comments would blow up if I didn't mention Andre Drummond. You know, that's one. But, you know, with Andre, it's going to come through the buyout. I think another key name to keep in mind is Otto Porter Jr. So Otto Porter Jr., you know, he's one of Sharks, Marks' guys from way back. He made him a rich man, offered him the four-year, $150 million deal in 2017, got matched by the Wizards. We've seen Sean. He always finds a way to get his man. We saw it with Tyler Johnson. You know, the list goes on through there. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they kind of reel it out, because with the buyout market, you see a lot of names pop up that you're not going to see from when we're recording this to tomorrow or even 5 minutes after the recording's done. We didn't know LaMarcus Aldridge was going to be a name that pops up, you know, so it's going to be interesting to see how when it comes closer to that 25th deadline. It's 15 days, so it's just going to be interesting to see what names pop up. And kind of just base it off that, because the Nets are going to remain flexible throughout the deadlines. Steve Nash said it himself. He's going to make sure that the Nets remain flexible throughout the deadline. We saw with the 10-day contracts with Roberson, Shumpert, Tyler Cook from the G League. We saw them giving different guys looks and everything. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all kind of comes together. But yeah, you know, I'd say just off the top of my head, Otto Porter Jr. and Andre Drummond, you know, you can't ignore those two names.
When you're talking about the teams you got to get past, you know, to make these moves, do the Knicks scare you in the slightest as a possible 1-8 matchup?
Not really, no. Because the thing is with the Knicks, right? It's don't get me wrong. Like listen, I'm one of those guys that cover the Nets that want the Knicks to be good. What's going on in Los Angeles right now? I wish that was going on in New York. All right, I don't really want to see Knicks fans celebrating outside Madison Square Garden that they have a 500 record. With the Knicks, you know, they're interesting, right? They're one of those teams that they remind you a little bit of those older style Nets, right? Grit and grind, you know, not kind of those type of teams that really thrive off being that underdog. We saw Julius Randle be that all-star, you know, kind of shows that the familiarity with D'Angelo Russell when that kind of era happened. They're speeding up their rebuild. You know, Leon Rose is doing a great job over there. Obviously, he's got a ton of connections considering his past job that he had with being in an agency. Obviously, you know, the Knicks, it's going to be one of those things with the Knicks. You know, it's been reported throughout the whole season. Well, are they going to trade for a star or whatever the case is? You know, they have the assets to do it. But, you know, with the Knicks, they don't scare me. You know, I don't think the Nets are going to be one of those teams that's going to be a threat to be or put in the conversation saying, hey, they're going to be upset in the first round, right? They're going to be more of those teams that's going to be like, all right, Are they going to face Philly in the second round? Are they going to face Milwaukee? Are they going to face Toronto? It's more going to be more as the playoffs progress to see the final four teams or the final however amount of teams or whatever the matchups are in the later half, second round, conference finals, all those type of stuff. Then you could start going in there. You know, Milwaukee and Philadelphia are obviously the two names you got to worry about, especially Philadelphia, you know, with Joel Embiid. You know, Blake, like we talked about before the other day, Blake Griffin's not going to be a Joel Embiid stopper. He was never really known as for his defense or anything like that. So Nets know that, and, you know, that's why I've been mentioning the buyout market. You know, considering they're loaded in the front court right now with a lot of kind of tools to mix and match with, it's going to be interesting to see who they bring in to kind of, when it comes down to playoff time, it's like, okay, this is the actual roster that we're going to be rolling with into the playoffs rather than remaining flexible until the buyout mark.
All right, before we get to our rapid fire, I have one more kind of segment for you, Chris. It's called Finish This Sentence.
Okay.
A Joe Harris made three-pointer is like...
I'm trying to think of like a good way to sum it up. Like, right? You know, Joe Harris three-pointer is exhausting for other teams. I'm going to put it that way, right? Because I think you want to put it... It's not like the magnitude that Steph has where you make a shot from 40 feet out and it just drains the other team. It's one of those things where it's going to come down to a Joe Harris made three is obviously exhausting on the other team because, like what I mentioned before, with the gravity that the big Nets big three are pulling, and then you got one, if not the league's best three-point shooter making shots as well, you know, you can only have so many men guard some players, and especially if you double-team Durant, Harden, or Irving, whatever the case is. If you have Joe Harris making threes out here, it's obviously exhausting for other teams.
I like that. Exhausting. That's a good one. All right, Brandon, do we have anything for Chris before we get to our rapid fire?
No, let's get on with it.
All right, here we go. 10 questions, quick answers. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Number one, your favorite NBA basketball player of all time?
Favorite NBA basketball player of all time? I got to go Kevin Garnett.
Number two, will Blake Griffin dunk in his first game as a Net?
No.
Number three, what was your favorite Nets moment from the first half of this season?
I honestly got to go with that Boston game in the very beginning of the season. You know, seeing it all kind of come together with Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, I think that was my favorite moment because then that gave Nets fans an image of, oh, this is what's coming, you know?
We didn't have James Harden yet.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You know, like that showed a bright image of like, oh, wow, the future is really bright. You know, it's one of those. So I have to go with that.
Number four, who is one former Net that you miss like crazy?
Joe Johnson.
Number five, was that fake behind the back move, an alley-oop pass from Kyrie Irving to DeAndre Jordan, the sickest play of the season so far?
Yes, I would go with yes.
That was so cool when that happened.
That was crafty. Actually, no, there's that, and then there was that really acrobatic reverse layup from Irving that one game.
Oh, yeah, that was pretty sick. I remember that.
I forgot who the opponent was, but there was that. They're neck and neck, but I would have to go with the alley-oop.
Number six, is TLC, Timothy Luwawu-Cabarrot, good or bad at basketball?
I'm going to go with streaky.
That's a fair answer. Number seven, if Kyrie Irving is now a shooting guard, where would you rank him among the league as a shooting guard? I mean, like in the top five of shooting guards.
Top seven, top six. Not quite top five. I'd say somewhere in that range. You know, it's not obviously, you know, it's you can mention top five, but, you know, there's a lot of you guys watch the NBA. There's a lot of great shooting guards out there, you know, so I would have to go based on importance and everything, shot making, almost all the skill set the shooting guard needs. I'm going to have to go top seven.
Okay, that's fair. Number eight, who is the most hated Net of all time?
You could say Dwight. You could say Dwight in the beginning. You know, he had that thing where he didn't want to go in the beginning. You know, he didn't want to sign with them.
Wait, Dwight Howard was a Net?
No, he in the very beginning, remember he trashed him in free agency like 8 years ago when he was leaving the Magic?
Yes, yeah.
But there was that one. Oh, are you talking players that played on the Nets?
Players that played on the Nets. Who is the most hated Net? That's what I meant.
But
Dwight is hated by Nets fans. I'll agree with you on that.
Hated.
Yeah.
Most hated? I'm going to say, you know, it's got to be, like, in Brooklyn era, it's got to be Darren Williams.
Yep. Yeah, I would tend to agree.
It's got to be Darren.
I don't think Nets fans were ever disappointed by a player as much as they were by D-Will.
Mm-hmm.
Number nine, would you rather have Philadelphia's core or Boston's core for the next 5 years?
Philadelphia.
And finally, number 10, what is your favorite pizza in New York City or Brooklyn?
Usually I'm in a rush when I'm in that area. You know, being from a North Jersey guy, you know, transportation's rough, especially.
Got to get back. You got to catch that last train at Penn Station.
You got to catch the last train at Penn, or you're stuck in Sea Caucus for 20 minutes, hitting every stop around the corner, you know? So Giuliana's in Brooklyn. That one sticks out to me. You know, I think that one's a good one.
Truly Honest is the name of it.
Yeah, something like that.
You were going to say, truly, honestly, this is the best one, but Truly Honest, that's the name of the spot.
No, it's Giuliana's. Giuliana's.
You said Giuliana's. I thought you said Truly Honest.
Well, I'll tell you right now, it's Truly Honest good pizza. Yeah, it's
that's
good.
The new slogan right there.
Yeah.
Anyone who's in Brooklyn, check out Giuliana's. Chris, we thank you so much for coming on the podcast tonight and talking Nets basketball with us. Where can our listeners find you?
You can find me at CMilholland SB on Twitter. You can find me at Chris Mulholland on Instagram. And you can find my work at Nets Daily, SB Nation's Nets Daily. So that's where you can find me. If I have my podcast myself with my co-host Doug Barrick. We're on the Wingspan podcast. And if you want to find me in a book version, I wrote a book, Basketball Beyond Borders, Globalization of the NBA. It's on Amazon. Yeah. So that's where you can find me.
All right. There you heard it. Buy Chris's book. Listen to his podcast, Wingspan with Doug Barrick. And follow him on Twitter for all your latest Nets news. Chris, from one Jersey guy to another, thank you again for coming on the show, man. We really appreciate it.
Of course, man. From the great state of New Jersey, you know, best one around. That's what it is.
Much better than Pennsylvania.
Oh, agree.
All right, thanks, Chris.